The Federal Communications Commission partially upheld a complaint by two rivals of SBC Communications Incorporated that alleged the telephone giant violated a 1999 merger agreement by refusing to share parts of its phone network with them. The finding frees the two companies that brought the complaint, Core Communications Incorporated and Zedtel Communications Incorporated, to seek financial damages against SBC, which was fined $6 million by the FCC in October last year over the same allegations. The agency found that SBC violated the merger agreement in 5 of the 13 states in which the company provides phone service. SBC, which said it is considering its options, has contested the FCC's action on the ground that the matter should be resolved by state utility commissions. An e-government program to make the federal government more citizen-friendly is $40 million short of its intended budget in the US, and this could hurt White House efforts to improve public access to regulations, information, and services. The White House requested $45 million to put its e-government strategy in action this year, but Congress cut that money to just $5 million. President Bush has asked Congress to spend $345 million for the program over a four-year period. Mark Forman, who's head of the e-government office at the White House Office of Management and Budget, acknowledged that the shortfall is an obstacle and that the White House wants to restore the amount it originally requested. But he said the government still must carry out the plan. The Bush administration's e-government plan includes dozens of goals besides increased information sharing, such as modernizing government technology and ensuring the computer networks are safe from online attack. The government already has built several online resources to improve public accessibility to legislation, including websites that focus on regulations, voluntarism, and business law. Only 8% of the American population is familiar with the term e-government, according to a study released last week by the Council of Excellence in Government. Half of the American population has, however, used a federal, state, or local government website to get information or conduct transactions, the study showed. About 52% of Americans are concerned about how the government will use their personal data, the study also found, noting that only 29% of Americans polled gave their personal data to a government website, while 70% gave such data to a commercial website. The report also found that 61% of Americans are interested in using the internet to renew their driver's licenses, and 54% oppose online voting. Rumors of their demise were greatly exaggerated, one could say, when CNN accidentally made publicly available obituaries of several international figures who are, in fact, still among the living. Meeting this premature fate were the likes of US Vice President Dick Cheney, former President Ronald Reagan, Cuban leader Fidel Castro, Pope John Paul II, and South African political icon Nelson Mandela. Their obituaries were mock-ups prepared in advance of the actual event. CNN spokeswoman Edna Johnson said the obituary pages were never posted among the news items on CNN.com itself. The design mock-ups were on a development site intended for internal review only, said Johnson. The developmental site was temporarily publicly available because of human error. News organizations routinely write the obituaries of newsworthy people well ahead of their actual deaths. Then, when that moment inevitably arrives, the news agencies need only update the piece with information about how those people died. The CNN pages caught the attention of the website The Smoking Gun, which posted copies of the obituaries, including those of Reagan, the Pope, and Mandela. The Smoking Gun gave credit for their discovery to the intrepid folks at FARC.com, adding that the pages on the CNN site had been searchable via Google and were yanked about 20 minutes after being exposed. The mock-ups were in the same style as the obituary that CNN ran for the death of Britain's Queen Mother last year. 15 minutes before he was due to lecture on security flaws in a debit card system used on 223 college campuses, 22-year-old Billy Hoffman found out that a judge had banned him from talking. Hoffman had used a screwdriver to break into a laundry room swipe machine that reads buzz cards, identification cards used by staff and his fellow students at Georgia Tech, and similar to ones at hundreds of other schools. The computer engineering major says he found ways to cheat the school out of cokes, laundry service and cash. He was scheduled to discuss his findings before computer hackers at the Interzone conference in Atlanta last week, but cardmaker Blackboard got a judge to issue a temporary restraining order. Hoffman said he wasn't a curiosity seeker breaking the law. He says he was trying to expose security flaws so they could be fixed. Washington-based Blackboard likened Hoffman to a common thief who's spreading his criminal methods. Blackboard, which reported revenues of $69.2 million in 2002, said it could suffer severe financial losses if Hoffman's methods are spread. Although Hoffman wouldn't discuss the specifics of how he hacked into the system because of the restraining order, he'd previously published the information on a website that's still publicly available. The website discusses ways to trick a vending machine into giving free drinks and deceive a laundry machine into starting for free. Hoffman also describes other possible ways to exploit the buzz card, getting into dormitories and sporting events, ordering free food on the student meal plan, and getting textbooks for free. The lower house of the German parliament has passed new legislation covering digital copyright in the country as part of the implementation of the European Union Copyright Directive. The bill represents a compromise between academic publishers, who are worried that the new bill will make unauthorized copying of work easier, and supporters of an open access publishing model, who complain that the bill is a barrier to a free information society. The bill has yet to be passed by the Parliament's second chamber and will be supplemented by a second bill on the subject that will attempt to mollify the concerns of the two groups. Bulk unsolicited email or spam will be outlawed in Australia possibly as soon as by the end of this year, the Minister for Communications, Senator Richard Alston, said last week. The federal government in Australia would draft legislation as soon as possible, he said, that would make spam an offence under the Telecommunications Act and other laws. The exact sanctions for sending spam haven't been determined, but they're not expected to include criminal charges or jail terms. The government pledge came in response to a report from the National Office for the Information Economy, which recommended federal legislation making it illegal for companies to send out commercial emails or any other sort of electronic messages, including SMS messages, without the prior consent of the recipient, unless the sender has some sort of business relationship with the recipient. That could include an implied relationship, such as being in the same business. The NOIE report also called for legislation requiring the accurate physical and electronic addresses of the sender be included in all commercial emails, as well as the sender's name. That's in line with anti-spam laws in parts of the US, where it's illegal to modify sender information at the top of an email. The Minister's office said the new anti-spam legislation would be pretty much as outlined in the report, which was commissioned by Senator Alston. The report also calls for a law to be created making it an offence to use a carriage service in the commission of any other Commonwealth offence, potentially giving law enforcement agencies another weapon in the war against spam and other cybercrimes. The last phone-free sanctuary has just been conquered. In a stunt to promote mobile messaging, three companies have joined hands to bring cell phone service up the world's highest mountain, Mount Everest. China Mobile has set up a temporary wireless network on the mountain to allow progress of an upcoming expedition to be documented via SMS or short messaging service and MMS or multimedia messaging service. Handset maker Motorola will provide its 388C MMS-enabled handset for message transmission, while a third partner, Sohu.com, a China-based net firm, will provide content services such as exclusive reporting on its website. Europe is still the most expensive region of the world for DSL, the broadband internet access service over the telephone network, according to new research published by analyst company Point Topic. The research indicates that the service providers in North America and Asia Pacific continue to be cheaper than those in Europe, as they have been for the past 3 years. Point Topic focused their studies on average potential tariffs for the first year, including any one-off equipment installation and activation charges levied by the larger operators, choosing services closest to the 500 kbps standard. Illustrating the trend, Point Topic gives the example of first-year costs for Bell Canada's 1 Mbps service, which has consistently been around €28, that's $30 per month, since March of 2001. Compare this with costs in France between €40, that's $43, and €64, or $69, for the same period, or between €56, $60, and €74, $80, in the United Kingdom. Costs in some other countries have changed quite sharply. Japan now has one of the fastest growing DSL markets in the world, and it also now has DSL services at around the €28 mark, or $30 mark, per month. In 2000, before regulatory intervention to kick-start the market, the Japanese had the highest costs of any DSL market at around €84, or $90 per month. South Korea has the highest level of broadband penetration in the world, while Taiwan has the cheapest prices. Intel Corporation, the world's largest chip maker, says it has cut the price of its fastest microprocessors for desktop and laptop PCs by as much as 38%, following its regular pattern of slashing the cost of its chips in advance of faster models. The price of Intel's Pentium 4 microprocessor, running at 3 GHz, was cut by 32% to $401 from $589. The price of the mobile Pentium 4 chip, running at 2.4 GHz, was cut by 38% to $348. Intel last made price cuts in February. The cuts came as Intel introduced faster models of both types of chips. The price of Intel's newest chip for desktop computers, a Pentium 4 which also runs at 3 GHz but has a faster system bus or pathway to the rest of the computer, was set at $417. The new mobile chip, which runs at 2.5 GHz, was set at $562. Cuts to Intel's price list, which show the cost of bulk purchases of 1,000 chips, generally translates to reductions in the price of personal computers, because microprocessors, the brains of PCs, represent a significant percentage of the cost of a new computer. Intel isn't likely to keep the price of its fastest desktop Pentium 4 chips below $500 for long, according to a published report. A schedule of Intel's prices released last week by technology news site DigiTimes.com said that in May, Intel will set the price of a soon-to-be-introduced 3.2 GHz Pentium 4 at $637. Intel declined to comment on the DigiTimes report. However, the report did accurately predict the latest round of price cuts. And still with Intel, a possible glitch with a new processor has delayed Intel's plans to bring out new silicon for high-performance chips for top-of-the-line PCs. Intel delivered a new chipset on schedule but delayed a matching Pentium 4 processor at the last minute, causing a raft of new PCs to be without a processor for at least a while. The chipmaker had planned to deliver its new 875P chipset and a matching new 3 GHz Pentium 4 processor last Monday, paving the way for a number of new desktop and workstation models from PC makers including Dell Computer, Hewlett-Packard, and Gateway. But a possible problem with the 3 GHz Pentium 4 discovered at the last minute forced the company to delay the chip late on Sunday. During tests, Intel found anomalies with the new chips and decided not to deliver any more of them to PC manufacturers. Having lost millions with its ill-fated efforts to build a web portal a few years ago, Walt Disney Corporation is cautiously wading back into the internet with a string of innovative online products geared to the broadband market. Those include ABC News Live, an online game called Disney's Toontown, the first multiplayer internet game aimed at children, and a new technology at ESPN, which allows users to view sports highlights that are embedded in the web page. Disney also is in talks with various cable and phone companies about offering a broadband package featuring more than 100 Disney games. If successful, the company may eventually add music and movie clips to the package. The European Mobile Telephony Standard GSM, Global System for Mobile Communications, is the unchallenged world leader. According to a new study by Merrill Lynch, the European 2G standard, with its global market share of 68%, is by far the most widely used mobile telephony technology in the world. The study shows that the CDMA technology used in the United States and Asia comes in second place with a market share of only 13%. This is followed by TDMA, a technology that is primarily only used in South America, with just 9%. The analysts from Merrill Lynch estimate that the Latin American market currently offers the biggest growth opportunity for GSM. Many providers are planning to switch to the higher quality GSM network. Analysts from the market research company EMC World Cellular Database calculated that the GSM market in Latin America already grew by about 90% last year. In the USA and North America, the growth rate was over 40%. The GSM Association envisages that GSM customers worldwide will climb to over 1 billion by the end of this year. At the end of 2002, approximately 787 million customers in more than 190 countries used phones on GSM networks. And finally, a Eurobarometer survey published by the European Commission shows that across the EU, only 1 in 4 Europeans, 23%, use the internet to get health information. The picture varies considerably, though, between countries. In Denmark and the Netherlands, around 40% of people use the internet for health information, while in Greece, Spain, Portugal and France, usage is at just 15% or less. Health professionals, such as doctors and pharmacists, are still by far the most important sources of health information for Europeans, and the traditional media, television, newspapers, magazines, still outperform the internet. Improving health information is one of the priorities of the EU's €312 million Public Health Action Programme for 2003 to 2008. Under the EU's e-health initiative, the Commission has issued a recommendation on quality criteria for health websites. An EU ministerial conference on e-health will be held in Brussels on the 22nd and 23rd of May. 41% of Europeans think the internet is a good way to get information about health. This figure rises to 62% in Denmark, 61% in the Netherlands. 16% don't think it's a good source of health information, while 16% think it depends on the information they are looking for. 27% can't decide. 45% of Europeans ranked health professionals like doctors and pharmacists as their main source of health information. 20% see television as their main source of health information. 8% said books. 7% newspapers. And only 3.5% the internet. Television at 38.5% of responses, newspapers and magazines, both around 24%, scored well as additional sources of health information, as did discussions with family and friends at 29%. Medical and health organisations, such as the Red Cross, are the most trusted sources of health information across the EU, trusted by 84%. Consumer organisations are the second most trusted source at 67%, closely followed by schools and universities at 65.5% and environmental organisations 63%. The media was trusted by 39% of people surveyed, governments by 23%, while business and political parties had the lowest trust rating when it comes to health information at just 16% and 11% respectively. And that's News Briefs for this week.